Vous écoutez L'Autre Monde, nous sommes aux Utopiales, and we are with Joe Walton. Hi, nice to meet you.
Hi, lovely to be here.
Really? Lovely to be here in Nantes? It's not your first time, of course. It's your hometown, almost, by heart.
Yeah, this is the second time that I've been here. I was here in 2014. It was my first French convention. I found it very strange, but now I'm good at French conventions. I've been to a lot of French conventions since then. I've been lucky enough to be invited to a French convention every year since 2014. And it is lovely to be here. Nantes is very beautiful. Utopial is full of excitement. There's a lot of energy here. It's great to be here and see that.
Are the panel a little bit different in the Utopial? Because there is science fiction, there is fantasy, there is science too in the Utopial.
That's actually not all that unusual in the Anglophone conventions that I go to. That's reasonable. I actually think Utopial is more like a Worldcon or the sort of conventions that I go to in English-speaking conventions than the other French conventions that I've been to. It's more, when you have the conferences here, it's more a conversation between the people. When I went to Etonnant Voyageur in Saint-Malo, you're on there with other people, but the moderator is incredibly well prepared, and they ask questions to each person that are different questions individually. It's more like three consecutive interviews than a conversation, and I found that very strange when I went there. Whereas now, this feels more normal in comparison. Yeah.
We're here to talk about you, of course, and about different books who are published in France, like My Real Children, donc Mes Vrais Enfants en français, qui est sorti chez Folio SF après être sorti chez De Noël, and Tooth and Claw, also chez De Noël and chez Folio SF maintenant. For these two books, there is fantasy inside, or there is some stuff who are not real, but when you read it, it could be a real life. How did you do that? It's so easy to read as any book, but there is something different. There is your touch. Do you feel something like that when you write? Or
My Real Children is a uchronie. In fact, it's two uchronies. It's two alternate histories that split from one moment of her life. And in that book, I was using the techniques of alternate history that, you know, you get from people like Elspray de Camp and Harry Turtledove, mm-hmm. and those kinds of techniques of writing alternate history. But I was also using the kinds of techniques of writing that you get in mainstream fiction in people like Marge Piercy and Gail Godwin and feminist mainstream fiction, which is a genre. And so I was combining those two genres. It's a crossover book. And one of the things that I thought about that book was that when we do crossovers in science fiction, it's often with sort of like with noir mysteries, or with comic book superhero things. It's always very, very male genres that we cross over with somehow, and not really with romance or with women's fiction or with chick lit or with things that are considered to be more feminine genres. And I thought it would be interesting to write a book where I used mainstream techniques to write about somebody's whole life, but that I used the alternate history techniques to write about somebody's whole life in two worlds, in two different worlds, where it diverges, but she's still the same person. And that's why her life diverges when she is in her late 20s, and not when she's 14, and she could have become two different people. She stays the same person through her life experiences. So that was certainly using writing techniques that are more usually used in mainstream fiction than in genre. with Tooth and Claw, I was just... The US edition of Tooth and Claw said on the back, mm-hmm. you've never read a book like Tooth and Claw. And I saw that and I thought, you know, if you've read Anthony Trollope's Framley Parsonage, you've read a book that's very, very much like Tooth and Claw. Because I just stole the plot. I just took the plot and translated it. It's, in a way, it's a cover version of Framley Parsonage. It's a cover version where everybody's dragons and I'm working with the implications of that. So in that book, I'm using the writing techniques of a Victorian sentimental novel, but I'm also changing them not just because it's about dragons, but I speed it up a lot to modern sensibilities, and I use about a quarter as much of the gentle reader stuff as Trollope does, because I didn't think that modern readers would be able to stick too much of that. But yeah, I'm using a mode in that book that is the Victorian sentimental mode, and then I'm using the fantasy thing, or the science fictional thing, really, of writing about aliens, writing about dragons as aliens, as people who are the size the dragons are and can fly and have all of these physiological things that make them different, to comment on stuff that you get in the Victorian novel, like the helplessness of women. I'm like, okay, well, what if the women really were helpless? What if we had sexual dimorphism that was like that? And Trollope has women who fall in love, and once a woman has fallen in love, they can never fall in love with anybody ever again. That's it. It really is exactly as if they turn pink, and they've just turned pink, and that's it. And that's what Trollope writes like. So I thought, okay, what if I made that a law of biology and went with that? And you'll notice I didn't even really do it. It's not as much a law of biology as they think, even for the dragons. But it was interesting. It was an interesting thing to do. So if they feel real, that's just good writing, you know.
For Tooth and Claw, did you choose the dragon right away, or did you choose different kind of species, and finally you choose the dragons because of this huge and mythologic creature?
No, it was dragons right away. In fact, the origin story for Tooth and Claw, I've told this story before. So when my husband went to work, I was in bed, my leg wasn't good, and I was in bed. And I was reading Anthony Trollope's The Small House in Allington, which is book 4 of the Barsetshire books. And after he'd gone to work, the phone rang, and it was the library, and they said that a book that I'd ordered had come in, which was Ursula Le Guin's The Other Wind.
Okay.
And so I got up and I dragged myself to the library and I got the book and I came home and I went back to bed. And when my husband came home, I was in bed reading. But what I was reading was The Other Wind. So he came home and he said, how are you doing? And I said, oh, you know, meh. And he said, how's your book? And I said, oh, it's great, but it doesn't really understand dragons. And he still thought I was reading The Small House in Allington. So he said, what? Trollope doesn't understand dragons? And I suddenly got it right away. In that second, when he said that, it just went beep, 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 in my mind. And I just thought, Trollope understands dragons. He doesn't understand people, particularly women. It's dragons he understands. And I just got the entire thing, the entire world of Tooth and Claw, in that 5 minutes, or right away, the whole way that I would do it. And so we had dinner. And the whole time we were having dinner, I was making dinner and then we were eating dinner, I was thinking about that. And then I just went to the computer and I wrote the first chapter. The first chapter and a half, in fact, before bed. That night, I just sat down and wrote it, pretty much as you see it. It was dragons, it was dragons all the way down, all the way along.
And you talk a lot about techniques for my real children. Did you read the book as we read it?
Yeah.
You didn't make one line of time and the other one after?
No, I don't think that would be possible. I wrote it as we read it, and the chapters are in tension with each other. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything in one, it's in the other, or it's different in the other, it's transformed. So they're all, everything is balanced in the two chapters mm-hmm. with each other. So yeah, I wrote one and then the other one, and it ratcheted forward. And it was a very hard book to revise. Because if I changed anything in one, I had to change it in the other. And I had to remember what I'd done in the other one and do it. So, in fact, I did the editorial revision on that book all in one weekend so that I could hold the whole book in my head, so that I could read it all and just keep it all in there and do the changes that I needed to do before I forgot exactly where everything was for doing the tweaking. It wasn't a huge amount. But every little thing I changed, I had to make sure that I either changed it, didn't change it, did something equivalent in the other one to keep it in tension and in balance. It's a book that is very, very balanced, and that made it really hard to edit.
For this book, did some people come to see you and told you, this book changed my life, or you enlightened me with this life of Patricia?
I don't think anybody's told me that it's changed their life. But a lot of people have come to me and told me about ways that they have changed their life or ways that their life could have been different. Because I think we've all got times like that. If we married somebody or didn't marry somebody, or if we took a job or didn't take a job, if we went to one school or another school, I think we've all got those kinds of turning points. So a lot of people have told me about turning points in their life when they change doing something. Quite recently, a friend of mine in Italy who only speaks a little bit of English, because there was an Italian edition of this book, he'd read it in Italian. And he said to me very hesitantly, I too have had two lives, and that he'd changed his life and that it could... Yeah, and I think that it's quite a common experience. And the other thing that people come to me and say about that book is, I have a relative who's in a nursing home who has Alzheimer's, and it's made me think about them and... like that. I had email from a nurse who works in a facility like that asking if I worked in a facility like that, and I said no, but I had a relative who was in a place just like that. But I took that as a great compliment that she thought that I might be an elder care nurse. So those are the things that people say to me about that particular book generally.
The theme of the Utopial this year is code and decode. What have you in mind when you listen to that two words?
I'm a writer, but I'm also a reader. And, you know, I read a lot, and I read a lot in genre and also out of genre. So when I think about code and decode, it's not my work that I think about at all. Mm-hmm. It's sort of masses and masses of other works that have engaged with that. And I think it's something that in this century we've really done a lot within science fiction, both in the overt sense. So the steganography in Verna Vinge's Deepness in the Sky, and Cryptonomicon also, where it's doing a lot of stuff like that. And also things like G. Willow Wilson's Alif the Unseen, where she's talking about the Arab Spring and the internet in that, and the coding in that. But also coding in the other sense of the word, when you talk about how people are coded. so that people are sending you clues in their clothes to their class and status and culture. And those kinds of codings and decodings where we understand that. And that is something that I think in the last 20 years we've been really all over as a genre in a really great way. Ada Palmer is here. She's a friend of mine. Her first novel has just been published in French, To Like the Lightning. And that is all over that kind of thing where people in those world, in that book, belong to, instead of nation states, they belong to hives that are non-geographic and optional. Mm-hmm. And where you wear different clothes that indicate what hive you belong to, and you're literally decoding a person when you look at them, because they'll be wearing something that tells you that they belong to a particular hive. And then they might also, for instance, have a tricolour flag that would tell you that they speak French. They might have rainbow socks to tell you they're gay. You know, but we might have rainbow socks. And it might be socks, but it might be a scarf. You know, and that whole level of codings and decodings is what I think about. And I think that it's a great theme. And I think it's something that it's very topical, because it's something that we've really been expanding all of that kind of stuff in the last little bit. I have a short story in the Utopial collection, which is called The Panda Coin. It's on a space station, and it is about a coin that goes from hand to hand. And it is all about the way that people perceive each other and are interpreting each other, because it changes point of view as each new person gets the coin, which is a conceit I took from Marguerite Yourcenar. A coin in nine hands. That's what it's called in English. I don't remember the French title. I know it, but my brain is useless. And I just thought that was a wonderful idea, and that you could use it in a science fiction way. And you could do that, and that's just an interesting thing. It's a great topic.
What are you working on?
I have a novel which is coming out next July, which is called Or What You Will, and I just did the copy edit on that just now, and so that is done. And I'm at an interesting stage of beginning on a new project that I don't want to talk about. But I'm also working on a non-fiction project because, you know, I have they're not in French, but I have the What Makes This Book So Great and the History of the Hugos volumes that are non-fiction, where I write about books. And I'm working on a book that is going to be called How to Love Science Fiction, mm-hmm. which is a history of the genre, but which is also looking at what is still worth reading and what is going to sort of like, okay, it might be the first story that did this thing, but it's written like lead, or it's really sexist. And so it's about what of the history of the genre is good and still worth reading. And the subtitle of this book is From Voltaire to Terra Ignota, because I'm going to start with Micromegas, yeah. The first real science fiction story. And there are certain themes that are in that story of first contact and also of constructing the universe, that I'm going to use it to look at the way that science fiction has grown and developed all through. So,
a lot of work.
Yes. Also, I keep stopping working on it to write novels because it's easier. But I can do it now. I had to wait for another book to be finished before I could work on it. So I'm going to be writing that, and I'm going to be writing a new book. But I had a book out in May, Lent, And Or What You Will is coming out in July, so I'm nicely ahead on novels at the moment. But I'm also very excited for a new project. Starting something is great; it's really fun. But I don't want to describe it because it's not in a good place to. Also, you know, it could jinx it, and it could all go wrong.
We offer you the opportunity to follow a way. I mean, that you can choose to go second star to the right and just ahead until morning, follow the yellow brick road, go up on the stairway to heaven, go down on the highway to hell, or go to infinity and beyond. Which way would you choose?
Oh, I'm always going to be infinity and beyond.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.